It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I'm your host, Lisa, and I really thank you for tuning in and joining us today. We have a great guest today, which is a subject that I really appreciate having gone through it myself. We have our guest today is Thomas Gates, who is going to talk about his near-death experience that really inspired the work that he's doing now. And the work that he's doing now is Healing Light Spectrum, which is in many ways an aspect of connecting with divine and helping others heal through their physical and their emotional issues, health issues. So I will turn this over to Thomas Gates so he can explain in greater detail his work. But at first, we're going to talk to him a little bit about his experience of having a near-death experience and what happened and what he went through and what that was like, because that's an experience that some people have experienced and really changed their lives. So without further ado, welcome Thomas Gates. Thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities today. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me again. It's always a real pleasure to be on your show. You're one of my favorite interviewers. It's really you always ask great questions and always have a great time.
Oh, well, thank you, Thomas. I thoroughly enjoy it, and you're on because you're one of my favorite people. So I'm, you know, I've had you on before, and I think we had you on with somebody else. So I figured you needed your whole show by yourself. So here we are.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah.
Now, you know, I touch upon the subject of near-death experiences online and blogging and social networking, and there's a lot of buzz about it, because there's a lot of personal interpretations, there's a lot of personal experience that goes with near-death experience, and then there's others who have never had a near-death experience who seem to want to categorize it or explain it in different dimensions or in different ways when the reality is they've never experienced it. So, you know, I want to talk to one of the main dudes who has experienced it, because I've gone through it. I've gone through it twice, and you know, you've gone through it. So we bond and we relate on this in a lot of similarity, both our experiences and what we went through and how we felt and how it changed us. So let's roll the clocks back a little bit, and let's go back to your experience. Mine was almost 30 years ago, so I imagine yours was a bit back there as well. And let's go back and talk about that experience with you, Thomas. Go ahead. I'll give you the floor and just let's talk freely about it.
Okay, great. And one thing I'd like to say before we really get started is I know a lot of times we really get into it. We never have time to take questions sometimes. And one of the things I really love is to have people call and ask anything they want to ask. I may not know all the answers to this whole thing. I don't claim to be, you know, the foremost expert on near-death experience. I'm an expert on my own experience.
Right. As we all are.
like you talked about, you know, I travel a lot and I speak to many people in groups around the world. And, you know, I've heard many, many different experiences, and I always am fascinated by them. And my belief is that every experience that anybody has in the category of near-death experience is the right experience for them. There's no one right experience. It's perfect for you as it unfolds. There's no need for any longing that you could have this or that or whatever. It's perfect. So anyway, having said that, what happened, you know, I've been actually writing my book for some time off and on, and I'm getting ready to put a audiobook on my website that people will be able to order and download directly. So, and it's really funny that this interview came up about when it is, because I've been working on that, and I just happen to have a little section open that is exactly what you're talking about, like, well, what happened, part of that process. So without going into all the detail of, like, why I ended up, you know, in the hospital and all, but, I mean, essentially that's what happened for your listeners, is that I got really sick and ended up in the hospital, and it was so serious, suddenly emergency surgery, that I wasn't expected to live. And they said so, and then something happened. So, you know, one of the things I thought I could do for a moment is just read you a little section. Maybe just take a
wonderful
few minutes. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, good. So I'll preface that with saying, okay, so I went through the surgery, and there were complications following that. So a few days after that, probably 5 days, I had major infection that had gotten so serious to the point that my fever was very high, and they couldn't keep it down, and it was approaching 107, which is when you have to leave.
Right, that's pretty serious,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So I was pretty out of it. Pretty intense experience. But so here's something that happened, at a certain point there.
Okay.
I suddenly heard someone walk into the room and say to my father, "We're sorry. We've done everything we can. We're not sure he's going to make it." Then the person quietly walked out of the room. Now, I heard the words, but I couldn't even begin to believe them. I could not move, nor could I speak. But I remember shouting inside my head, "That's crazy. They're in the wrong room. There's no way I'm going to die. I'm too young to die." It was just like, it seemed totally impossible to me that I could actually die. It was, in fact, the most absurd thing I'd ever heard in my life. But within moments after silently declaring that I was not going to die, something very strange began to happen. Suddenly, all the pain completely stopped. I was very thankful for that, but I was not certain what was actually happening. I began to feel an odd sensation stirring in my feet. It started in my toes and began to move very slowly farther up my feet, into my ankles and into my legs. There was a sheet covering my body from my feet to my chest, yet I could see through it as I looked at the areas wherever the sensation was occurring. As I looked down, I saw only an empty shell in the shape of my feet, like a cicada's empty molted shell. I was captivated by this process as it slowly continued to move up my legs and farther up into my body. Once it reached my chest, I finally realized what was actually happening. It was true. I was dying. I was slowly, but most certainly, emptying out of my body. This process continued to move up past my chest, into my neck, my face, and into my head. Then I finally popped out of my body through a tiny pinhole-sized spot at the very top of my head, just where it begins to curve downward at the crown near the back of the head. I looked down below and saw my lifeless body lying on the bed. Although I saw it from only just above, at first I didn't recognize it. I thought, "What's that?" And then I realized, "Hey, that's me. But wait, how can that be me, because I'm up here looking down at that?" That was the moment when I truly understood that nobody really dies. Nobody gets out of here dead. My body was still there, but it was an empty box, a tiny box. I thought to myself, how can I possibly have been contained in such a little space like that? I was so much bigger than that. It was as if I had spent my entire life living in a tiny house, and only now, as I was suddenly evicted, did I realize this. If I had gone no further than this, and then returned to my body, it would have been well worth the price of admission. It was worth any amount of suffering I had gone through to have this one amazing realization. Our bodies may die, but we somehow continue to exist and to experience. So that's kind of what it was like, you know, with a few other details not there, but I just kind of condensed that so that was what was happening in those moments.
That's a very powerful passage, Thomas. That was took me right there with you, and very well written, and really you could feel it. You could feel the experience, and I'm not sure if it was being felt, you know, because I can resonate with that, or that you just took me there. You just, with your words, you just really took me there. So this is something that, you know, like you said earlier in the beginning of the program, which I'd like to come back to, is that every person I've spoken to who has had a near-death experience has experienced a different type of phenomenon. And like you said, it's all perfect for that individual. And there's all something that's a seed of similarity, and then there's their own individual seed of where they are within themselves, of what they need to experience within that experience itself. And when you went through your experience, were you somebody who had a deep faith at that time in your life, or did your faith develop and emerge from that point of moving through the experience and then coming out of it and then realizing what you had just gone through?
Yeah, I kind of laugh because, I do talk about all of this, you know, in my whole book, which is first audio book. And that's funny because the answer to that is basically I essentially had my upbringing and faith in nature. As a child, I lived in the country, but I spent as much time as I possibly could in the outdoors, lived in a tree during the days, you know, and had a great time. Had to come home at night and all that. But I went to Catholic school, and I never quite really got that on certain levels about the religion and all that. But I definitely believed in God because I saw it every day in nature. I saw things functioning in a way that didn't have any written words, any of that. It just was like, if you watch how the animals move, how the season after season comes and goes, and the way the trees move with the wind, and all these things, it was a great education for me, and that's where I got my spiritual value, that and from my mother. So I wouldn't say I was a person of faith.
Okay.
But I believe in God, definitely.
And as a person of faith, maybe that's, you know, that is something that somewhat develops through circumstances, that you actually develop your faith. I really feel like faith has been developed for me personally through hardship and challenges, because having gone through the challenge or the hardship, there may be points where you lose faith, or you lose touch with spirit, or you even curse God out, or wherever you're at in that process. And then coming out the other end, you know, you realize, hey, I made it. And so therefore that faith seems to envelop and develop and grow and evolve. And for me, that's how it happened. But you know, I would say that you were a man with some faith there. I mean, communing with nature to me is the biggest church there is. So, you're being very humble and modest, but I would say that you were, you know, and especially with that that dogmatic Catholicism that's ingrained in the psyche and the consciousness, there's a little bit of fear of not having some faith there. So I think that,
that's so true, because, you know, sometimes I get asked to come and help people who are in transition, like say in a hospital or something. And sometimes it's people that I know, but often it's been, you know, people that I've never met, but people somehow knew about me, and they, you know, and I sometimes I'm glad to do that, to help people through that. Not just the person who's doing the transitioning. Technically, they know what they're doing, but also for the families who are struggling with that transition. But, it's very interesting. What I have found many times, and this is perfectly natural and fine, is that, say, someone has had an upbringing, a religious upbringing, but maybe they just weren't into it.
Right.
As, as one approaches that time that you may be transitioning, quite often that's what people will fall back on because they're familiar with that. And there's sort of a sense of like, well, if that's all true and that's right, everything that I was ever taught, maybe I should kind of get my hands around that a little bit right now.
Right.
You know, well, that does happen. But, you know, the thing that I always say for people, they ask me, well, what should you do when you're in that situation? You know, and I always say, well, the best thing you can do is just maybe even for a moment forget about everything that you ever thought you knew and just let go and go for the ride, because your spirit and your soul has evolved to a point that it knows what to do, and it will
right.
naturally be drawn into an evolutionary direction for you. So, and we don't want to have the boundaries of that could possibly hold us in any one particular spot, when in fact we could, as I was experiencing in my journey, is just experience this ever-expanding value of creation into the depths of creation and even just beyond the manifest creation in the subtlest layers. And that way, then we can maybe really fully experience that source of our being that gave rise to us. And some people say, well, you call it source. Would that be God? And I said, well, sure. Yeah, we can say God.
Right.
Because God is the source. Yeah, great. And
right.
all the experiences we have in life, like you were talking about, was, you know, it's like we go through things. We go through difficult times sometimes. And sometimes we kind of lose faith in ourselves and in life.
Right.
But when we can go through those things, and I've met many, many people in one of those books that I'm in, you know, we talked about our experiences and difficult things that people go through. And while you're going through it, you don't have any way to really have a sense of gratitude. But somehow, after you get through it and you come out on the other side, you look back and go, wow, look what I did. Look where I am now. Because of that experience, what I learned and
right.
went through. Now,
right.
I have a sense of gratitude for having gone through it. So that's sort of the name of the game for us in this world.
It certainly is, and that's so eloquently put. Great, great statement there, Thomas. That's because we are, you know, we come into this world, you know, fully aware, and yet we lose the awareness through what we've allowed ourselves to kind of attach ourselves to, whether it was dogma or projections or conditioning or however we decide to migrate through our life. And then we have these life circumstances that happen and or a near-death experience that happens. And you can't really go back to how you were once you've expanded to this new dimension of awareness and perception. It's just literally impossible. It's almost like, you know, a graduate yeah. student going back to kindergarten and trying to learn something
oh,
new other than compassion, you know?
yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's like that. And I mean, you know, like for me, it was especially that way because I definitely couldn't go back to how it was before, because after I had gone through my entire journey in near death, actually that word near in my case doesn't ever feel right, you know, like near death. You know, they call it near death because you actually came back, but I went through the death process. I experienced that process, the body going through all those changes and going through it, and then leaving and then being able to clearly witness everything after that. So it's like I died. I just happened to come back. So one of my friends who had a near-death experience said, there ain't no near about it.
Good point.
But I came back. No. The thing was when I came back, I had fully intact the memory of the entire journey that I took step by step, moment by moment. But once I was back in the body, I had no idea what this was. I had no memory, complete, total amnesia, not just of anything going on, but I didn't even know who I was or where I was or what I was. when I saw
right.
my hand move and all that and realized I'm in this, I didn't know what it was. So there was a time where I was kind of like a newborn baby, except I had full developed brain function and mental capacity to understand things and evaluate.
Right.
So it was the
right.
it was the so I definitely couldn't go back to the way I was before.
Well, you know, there's that part of personality that stays intact, and then there's those little mm-hmm. spices and juices that we just add to it and really recreate that personality to make it a whole lot more spicier. And that's how I
yeah.
look at it, is that, you know, you just cannot, it's impossible to go backwards and ignore, unless you really have your head so firmly implanted in the sand that you really mm-hmm. are that ignorant. You really can't go backwards.
Yeah.
So,
well, there are yeah, once you know something, you can't not know it. You can pretend
right.
you don't and try to avoid
right.
it. But it always comes up and keeps at you until you can finally just let go and accept that new reality. It's a new paradigm.
Well, it is a new paradigm. And I'm curious to know, because everyone that I've spoken to over 20 years that have had a near-death experience are very similar to you and I in regard to stories, experience, awareness, and evolution.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know if, I'm curious to talk to somebody who has had a near-death experience but maybe is interpreting it as a very scientific experience rather than a spiritual experience. Because I am certain that with as many different minds out there in the world, that somebody has had what is deemed by some a near-death experience. However, by that individual, perhaps it's deemed, you know, yeah, I almost died, but you know, I didn't see God. I didn't go through the tunnel. I didn't experience love mm-hmm. and a feeling of lightness. I didn't, you know. So I do have that little that. Well, actually, it's a pretty grand bit of curiosity to find out what the other side of the coin is in regard to their awareness or if they even
yeah.
grew or changed, you know, because...
Right. Well, you know,
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I've met a number of people in my travels and talked to them, people like that who have had, you know, they died momentarily, but they didn't have any experience. And they say, I didn't have anything at all like yours or any of these experiences I've read. But they said that I was dead for, you know, a few moments or whatever it may be. And they said there was just nothing there, and they wondered. What I have found is that even when that happens, there is an experience in there. And
yeah.
it's just occluded. And at some point, don't be surprised if some event happens in your life that will trigger something about that, and then some memory will actually come to you, and you'll know that you actually, you know, did experience something there. But it's okay. I mean, you know, either way, it all serves its purpose. We come to know.
Well, you know, and you know, the bottom line to all of it in regard to having actually died and then coming back into the body and living form is that it's obviously, regardless of your religious belief or not, if you're even an atheist, there's a reason why you didn't take your last breath and move beyond this earth. There's a reason you came back. And even if it's a reason for something else to be created and you don't understand what the reason is, there is a reason. And perhaps on the final passing of this life in your transition, it will become a clarity that you accept and understand in your soul. And then maybe, again, it's an evolution that's discovered in the beyond, in the afterlife. But there's always a reason why you don't pass and go on. And that brings me, I'll use that as my little segue here in bringing us to the work that you do now. Because
beautiful segue, actually. I was just thinking.
That happens. But you are doing Light Spectrum Healing, is that correct? Did I get the name accurate?
Actually, I call it Healing Spectrums for Health and Wholeness.
Okay.
I mean, it didn't come with the name.
Right, you had to vibe with that, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's very different. There is something out there called Spectrum Healing, I think, but it's completely, totally different thing altogether. But yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that and that how that came to be after your experience. Let's talk a little bit about what your work is and how you do it and how it was inspired. Let's start with the inspiration of it.
Oh, okay. When I first came back from all this, I did not know, I was not aware of having any particular abilities, anything, and I didn't know anything about that because when I had my experience, there weren't any books out yet about near-death experience. So I had no reference point, and I had nothing to refer to at that time. Shortly after that, that all happened, but I still didn't know about it. I only found out that they called it that, near-death experience, about 5 years after the fact, but when I first told my story to anyone. But things kept happening to me, and they always do. They still, to this day, I feel when something is shifting and changing, and I know, that's about that experience that I had, especially with that, with that golden light that I had gone into. That's a great source of healing. And so what would happen periodically, I'd have an experience that was related to that light, and it was wonderful. And it always, as a result, there were changes in my perception, and I began to perceive things at a different level and begin to see little finer elements of things that we may not be perceiving generally or that we don't think is possible. But so, that would happen. And one day it just happened that all of a sudden there was this huge explosion of gold again. When that happens, it's just that's all there is. You don't know anything else but you are. And you are that as well. You just become that, cold.
Right.
So that happened to me again, and only this time I have a body. I had a body to experience it within. I didn't have to die to have
right.
it. Thankfully, I was glad of that.
of course.
But after the dust cleared, so to speak, then I just spontaneously found out that I could see inside subtle layers of people's physiology in the body. And had never wanted to do anything like that, never thought I would. I was never drawn to any kind of, quote, New Age or, healing type work. I never thought about doing that. I was always a musician. That's what I did. But it just turned out that there I was one day seeing inside somebody's ankle. And
wow.
I saw all these things, and then there were these colors that began to appear, like violet first, and then that went on, and then something released. I saw it, dissolve in an injured ankle, and then soft color of soft white blue that was there, and then the person actually had been walking on crutches, and they got up and walked and had no more trouble with it anymore, no more pain, and that was the end of that. So that was my first experience with that. And I had absolutely no idea how that happened, why it happened or anything. I was like, a babe in the woods there, It's like I had attention, and I just kept, people would ask me, and I'd do something, and something would happen. So over the years now, this is the 11th year that I've been doing this pretty much full time, I've really gathered quite a bit of data and understanding of what is actually taking place with us as human beings in regards to trauma and consciousness of the physiology.
Okay.
So that's kind of a little bit how it started.
That's quite powerful. I mean, that had to absolutely, that almost was like a near-death experience in itself right there, just seeing through someone's physical form. and being completely sober and straight and doing so, that had to have been quite a mind awareness there.
Well, I knew what it was because I knew it was all associated to this experience, and so it was comfortable, it was fine, and I wasn't worried that I didn't know all the nuts and bolts and details. I didn't have to do anything. I mean, literally, I didn't try to do anything, and to this day, when I do this work, I'm not in a place of judgment about anything being right or wrong or better or worse or good or bad. I don't look at something and go, well, that shouldn't be that way, and let me do something about it. I don't even know how to do something about it. All I do is observe. But the way the gift came is that through that innocent observation, there's something that does happen, and it's an enlivenment of coherence in the physiology and in consciousness. There are literally brainwave functions that change during treatment that we're actually, this is fun, I'm going to go over to the university here in over here in Iowa where I am right now, probably the next couple of weeks, and we're going to hook us all up to some electrodes and do some tests. We're going to, on me as well as the person I'm treating, and we're going to look and see what's happening before, during, and right after that so that we can see the brainwave changes that take place there. I already know what they are.
Oh, so cool. Yeah. That is so cool. I wish I could be there for that. That's amazing.
You could be the subject.
Oh, I would dial me up. Let me know when. That's just because, you know, I know neuropathways change. I know that it can change within a perception. It can change within an experience. It can change. I've experienced it. I know it. I have no doubt about that. To see it actually lit up would be absolutely fascinating to me. So
yeah.
I think that's going to be a very, very cool experience. And how cool for the person you're working with.
Yeah, and you know, because I would love to get this out into the world even more. I do train individuals and healthcare professionals, doctors and psychologists, psychiatrists, people like that, how to use this method in their practices to help alleviate more suffering of the people and help them move faster, recover faster, very naturally and spontaneously. From within, it's this inside out, you know, that we all have the capacity to heal ourselves. It's just that, you know, the trauma in life actually leaves a residue of some remnants of the trauma, emotional elements, but they are physical as well, and they become more complex, and then we have all the problems and things like that. So it's a matter of how much coherence can begin to function in the body, so that it will say, ah, okay, we know what to do with that. We'll use that, and we'll get to work. Thank you. And I stay out of
right.
it, you know.
right. And in the work, so you know, you were talking a little bit earlier about, and I find this a little fascinating and coincidental, and I really don't delve into the world of coincidences because I really believe everything, you know, happens for a reason, but you and I both work and have worked with people who are passing on and transiting, and ironically, you and I have both had near-death experiences.
We should work together, be a team.
Yeah, no kidding. We should start a team. But, you know, this is, it's something that I don't advertise it. It is something that comes to me. It is something that people find me to do. And I've also, you know, worked with people who are, you know, are in, you know, illnesses that there's no, you know, no hope for recovery. And so, you know, when you're dealing with that fragile spirit and that vulnerability within a soul where they're recognizing that, you know, these are my last days on earth, there's such a softness of spirit. You know, I've also experienced the anger of spirit that's come through from others. You know, that they're angry and they're pissed that they're dying and they've got so much they want to do and why is God taking me and all of that. And that's, you know, completely normal and understandable. I totally get that. But then there's this other part where, you know, they've come to terms with their life, they've come to terms with their disease, and they're at this place of softness. There's like almost a childlike innocence that comes over them, in where they are very soft and very open and very, you know, like it, almost an air of expectancy. Have you experienced that as well?
Yeah. All that whole range of emotions people go through, and when they finally come to that place of some equanimity, some acceptance, and, you know, once we can get to there, acceptance of, okay, this is what is, that's all. It's just what is. And then we let go
right.
of all those meanings of what that means and all that, and just be present. Be present to, because if we can be present to every living, breathing moment that we have, not by some exercise of being present, but just the natural, spontaneous value of being present to what is in any moment, that's where the fullness and that's where the evolutionary process is so fast. And it's very important as we're facing that transition is to be in a space like that, if we can. Not everybody can, and that's okay. There's no right. But when one does come to that place, the process, the ritual of transitioning, if you will, it is like in the Vedic tradition, there's a thing called yajna, and the pundits and people, you know, do chanting and things like that for a specific reason to help things evolve more quickly. And that's what death is like to me. It's not death. It's a transition, and it's just a continuation of life. So the more that one can fall into that place of being present without so much attachment to things, then, you know, the faster that evolutionary process can take place in our evolutionary
yes.
track.
That's right. And that's, you know, there's a time and a place for every emotion and every experience in going through that transition. And the one thing that I've been aware of or perceived was that those who really held on to the anger were the most childlike and fragile souls of that I've ever met. That just to go back into the simplicity of physical touch, contact, unconditional love, open heart acceptance, non-judgment is really so healing to those personalities because they're coming from a place of complete panic, trauma, and fear in their psyche. They don't want to let go. They don't want to surrender. And it's an extreme, you know, when you're in a rational mind and you are dealing with a situation that is completely out of your control and you know your moments are limited, how overwhelmingly scary is that somebody who has never come to terms with their life, their choices, their actions?
Yeah.
I mean, it can be an overwhelmingly, paralyzingly fearful experience. And for those who are with those people, for loved ones who are with people who are going through that and go, you know, just touch them, love them, hug them, give them that unconditional love. And let that be as much as they can receive on their transition and going out of this world. Because that's what it's all about. It's all about the love. That's why we're here, you know?
And that's the thing to remember, too, is that when you're there with someone, that it's about them. It's not about you so much. You're a part of it. You're involved in it. But this person, it's their program. And they're in control of that. But so I always suggest that when you're with people, and, you know, like you said, during those times, people can go through all kinds of experiences, be angry, be sad, whatever it is. They might yell at you and, you know, like be angry at you or whatever. But what you have to do is just be like a duck with water rolling off its back. It's for them.
Yes.
And you just be present. And don't take anything, you know, like personally attack about you or this or that, or they're fussy and they're being cranky and all that, you know, just let go. You know, people can actually say whatever they want to me. If they want to call me this no good, lousy, whatever to their mind, that's fine. I don't take that personally. I know that this is part of the process, and you know, I'm there for them and I support them in this beautiful,
right.
This is a beautiful thing, and in traditions in other cultures, the death thing is not like it is here in America. And,
right.
I mean, it's a fantastic, beautiful process, and that's how I see it. And I'll say this.
Right.
I have witnessed both death and birth. Death many times, but birth, I was actually present for a birth. And I have to say, there's a moment where I can't tell the difference between, you know, whether it's, you know, which direction that's going. There's a little moment right there where there's a fine crossing of the line or something, you know, and it's, you know, it's still the same. It's life on both sides
right.
of the coin.
Right. And in the birthing process, there's also pain, physical pain. So
mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
you can't escape pain in this life. Somehow you're going to experience it. So get ready,
deal with
it. Let's move through it. But, because there's
the
that moment of
pain and suffering, too. Yeah.
Pain and suffering. That's
two
a
different
yes.
things.
Yes. Yeah. Amen. Good point. Excellent point. but that's a really great perception that death and birth both have that moment of transition, because there is that being that's entering into the world and it's leaving that spiritual, you know, cocoon, that cocoon of safety and coming into a world of the unknown. And, you know, in full faith and trust that it's going to be loved unconditionally and naturally. And so in the same processing, we're transiting from this earthly existence and our soul evolving into the afterlife of what we have created the afterlife to be for us. And I really truly believe that's the interpretation, however interpretations have been derived throughout the ages in regard to the, you know, Jesus saying, my Father has many rooms in his house for you. You know, I truly believe that the many rooms are created by our own consciousness in regard to what the afterlife exists for us individually.
Beautiful.
You know, and it's really, you know, you'll have the born again Christian, you'll have, you know, the rabbi, you'll have the Catholic priest, you'll have all of them with a different perception and all of them having a beautiful room awaiting them. So, you know, regardless of your belief, or even if you have no belief and you believe this is it, I'm just my thoughts and my feelings, and when I'm dead and gone, that's it, baby, I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that too could be your reality. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's everyone is entitled to their own belief and experience. But to have that understanding and knowing that, you know, as we're going through the transition, some of us have the ability, you know, when we are going to die or as we've watched loved ones pass, that there's a time period that exists, that whether it's a few days or months or, you know, or whatever they're struggling with, a time period to make peace with one's own soul. And then there's other people who their time comes and they have a massive heart attack and they're here 1 minute and gone the next, and there's none of that, you know, that period of adjustment or that period of coming to terms in the earthly plane.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, also you talk about, you know, what I've noticed over time, over the years of doing the work I do, and especially, you know, in my workshops where I train people, you know, how to do this, and I even do that online now, so people can do self-treatment with this technique. But over the years, it's very interesting. When people speak, I see things when they're speaking. I can observe. Suddenly, you know, it's not because I'm trying to do it. Sometimes it just spontaneously happens. Unless I'm in a workshop,
right?
It's on all the time, and I don't just blurt out everything that I notice and see, but I'm kind of handling some things too. But
taking notes, mental notes.
Yeah. But it's all very spontaneous as well. But you know, what I notice the most is that over time, you know, language is how we communicate generally. But language has limitations, and as we know, people misunderstand things sometimes. And what I've noticed is that sometimes I might say something in a workshop, and then someone will say back, maybe they say, well, you said such and such a while ago, and they'll say that I said something which is not what I actually said. But
right.
In their minds, it went to there because it's sort of like the assumption was that, oh, that's what he means, and then they'll say some words back that everybody has decided that this word means that or this or that. But what I found is that language, everything means something different to everybody. So when I'm sharing and speaking about things, I'm very literalist and very, very precise in my speech about these things, because I don't want to be confusing or you know, all of that. So that's an interesting thing. And so this one word called the afterlife, you know, we know what people mean in general about that. But like for me, technically, there is no afterlife. There is life.
Right.
And you know that.
Right.
I know.
Right.
But there are the words that are there. And like, it's nice to kind of delve into words and look at those things like, well, you know, okay, so what is afterlife? Well, you know, afterlife is just a continuation of life. It's just a different flavor. But there is that one element of existence, that essence of being that permeates all the creation forever and on all levels. And sometimes it's manifested as a human form. Sometimes it's not, you know.
Right.
So
right.
What I experienced in my journey through that death experience was the understanding of that, and not just understanding, but the experience of being all that. And so whether or not I'm in the body, or whether, you know, I've left it or whatever happens, I have no fear about that, because I know that I exist, and I always do. Maybe in different forms, different ways, different times that can be. It's possible. And I really have fun with the science thing. I like that too, because I really am fascinated by quantum mechanics, quantum physics, because after I got exposed to all that, I realized, wow, you know, essentially, technically, that death experience is an experience in quantum physics.
That is really cool, because you've also got this piece of peace with you that I totally get with you. I feel it. I hear it in your voice. I sense it in knowing you. And I'm certain that it's that peace that you have really developed and evolved into within yourself from this experience, because the work that you do is definitely a calling. It's not something that you really set forth to do. I'm sure like myself, the work found me. I didn't find it. And did you find that with your work as well, that, like you were saying, you looked through this woman's leg and her ankle, and there you're seeing things you never saw before. So in essence, the work too found you. I mean,
you know,
this was a huge calling, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. After I had the experience, you know, at first I thought the purpose of me being here was just to be, because I knew that I always am and I will exist and all that. And I found myself functioning as a human being. I knew there must be a reason for that, and maybe one day I would understand that, and that's fine. But I thought, hey, this is great. I'm experiencing value of creation, and that's great. Then later, other experiences helped me understand, oh, yeah, there was a reason everything happened. It was not an accident. It was all actually began developing when I was a child. And then I was able to look back and realize everything played out just the way it was supposed to be for me. And then for me to come to the realization of why it all happened, and what my purpose in this world is, why I exist in this world. And I knew that this was a gift. That way everything unfolded was for me to be able to serve a particular role in this world that is maybe unique to me, but we all have our own unique values that way. That's why we're here. We would not be in this world if we didn't have a clear purpose. Maybe we don't always know what it is, But it's not an accident that we're here. And so it's good to be here, embrace the natural tendency of your being, you know, find the things that, that resonate with you and see what happens and all. But I'm, yeah, it's definitely, I know why now that I'm here more than just to exist and to be and enjoy life. I'm here to help people, not just physically with things that they have, that works, but really the reason I do it is because I know the full range of experience that we can have as human beings without having to die, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
As we exist right. throughout creation, it's a fantastic possibility that we have in front of us. And so my goal is always that anything I do in this work is that people somehow will have that experience. And they do. When I treat people, they get to experience that very expanded, unbounded value that goes way beyond just the limited reality that we generally see in front of us every day. That's what's important to me, to help people cultivate that quality of experience so that, you know, that's the evolutionary path of all human beings. So I just play my little role in that to the best of my ability. And that's why I'm here.
I'd say that your role is a little bit larger than a little bit, because you've taken on a pretty big subject matter here, and you're delving into territory that very few people delve into. And I want to add also, because I really liked what you just said about the fact that you don't have to die. You don't have to go that close to death. You don't have to have a near-death experience to really appreciate and connect with that divinity, that essence, that real soulful healing miracle that we all have capable to us and available to us. And it reminds me a lot of how many people really chose to drop acid in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. Even today, I'm sure they're still dropping it, and it's probably a whole hell of a lot worse than it was then. But, you know, they did it for the a lot of times, they did it for the experience of what they were going to experience, for the mind expansion, for the ability to raise their consciousness. And yet, on the same flip side of the coin, we now understand and realize that you don't have to drop acid. You don't have to do drugs to go there. That we are very, very capable of expanding our consciousness and our awareness without substance, without drugs, without, you know, clouding that veil, you know?
Yeah, that's the most fantastic experience is experiencing these aspects of our being and creation that, you know, you could never get there with the drug thing, because the drug thing would only hold you in a particular space of experience.
Yes.
So maybe it's expanded in some way, but there's going to be a boundary to it. We don't want boundaries. Consciousness is capable of experiencing, I'm telling you, really, really vast, vast value of creation. All the way through the entire field of creation, we have that capacity as human beings to experience.
Right.
And that's
right.
You know, our birthright. Our birthright.
That's our birthright. Amen. And that's it's only contingent upon where we allow our perceptions to lie. And it really we are our own ability to expand or to step back into our comfort zone. And oftentimes it can be a little scary. I mean, I've gone into meditation sometimes where I have gone so far out there I thought I was dying. Again. And so, you know, and came back and had that little, you know, feeling of dropping back into my body. And it was like, whoa, I think I'll take a walk right now, because this is a little too high for me. I experienced that, randomly. But it's a little unnerving for someone who has experienced simply 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock church on Sunday. They sing their psalms. They say their prayers. They're living by the good book. They're following the Bible's word. They're tithing. They're doing all that they are told to do in regard to being a good, godlike person. And yet their heart's still fearful of feeling more, and their mind is still a little bit fearful of expanding to a new thought or new concept. And so,
well, I've treated people like that, actually, and they have had that experience of that very unbounded quality of consciousness, and it's always, you know, they oftentimes will say, "Wow, I've never experienced that. What is that?" Not generally any kind of fearful thing. It's just like, oh, it opens up a whole new possible reality that they've never either thought about or experienced, and boy, it sets things on a path. It's really interesting what it opens up for them. In their religion and their beliefs can actually flourish in ways that would be maybe sometimes those things we can fall into a restrictive space if we become so attached to certain beliefs that there's no room for expansion and all that, you know. That's a delicate balance in our lives. It's like our beliefs. See, me personally... I don't trust my own mind. If my mind starts talking a whole lot to me, I'm going like, okay, you don't know what you're talking about. I'll do whatever you want. It's okay. But I don't get too invested in, especially if I find that I'm resisting something. That's when I know, okay, back up a little bit. What are you attached to that you have to defend? And
right.
If I'm feeling defensive about something, then I know that, okay, I'm compressing into a very small space here. Why do I need to do that? And you know, so I've become aware of my physiology, and I actually teach people how to become aware of what the signals are in your physiology when you are compressing yourself into a smaller space as opposed to a more expansive value, which is the natural tendency, you know. And so that creates friction and difficulty when we do that. You know, we want to become aware, and I have trained people to just a very simple technique of how to become aware of what signals your body sends you so that you can then recognize that where you're kind of headed there, and maybe there's a simple technique you can do at a certain moment that will help release some of that binding kind of uncomfortable feeling that you get when
right.
You become too so attached to something. You know, the nature of life is very, you know, it's totally about evolution and expansion, and so belief systems are valuable, but they also, it's like a double-edged sword. You know, we
right.
use them to evolve. As long as we don't become locked to a point that we can't grow, that's very important.
That's right. That's right. We always want to have the open heart, and the open heart leads us to a greater expansion of our awareness and our perceptions and how we feel and empathize and have compassion. And, you know, it that just brings us right back around to being able to love ourselves and being able to love others. And, you know, your work is absolutely inspiring. It's enlightening. It's soul changing. It's one of those subtle shifts that when you had worked on me last year, and the shift that I felt from you working afar, because we were of course long distance, was such a beautiful essence of energy that I felt. And I highly recommend your work for everyone who's going through transition or wanting to expand who they are in their heart and soul. So let's lead them to your website at thomasgates.com and also to your near-death audiobook, which will be on your website as well for a download. Is that correct, Thomas?
Yeah, right. It's going to be up probably within 1 to 2 weeks, just doing all the technical things. But the recording is all ready, and this is volume one, which is taking you from, you know, what led to the experience on through the experience, and then a little bit of like what it was like returning. Volume two will come shortly after that, and that will be about what's happened in life since returning, what that was like.
Wonderful.
And learn from that and use in our lives, you know. Because that's what life, near-death experience, I believe, is about life. It's to teach us what we need to know and for living life here now. It's not about, don't worry about what happens afterwards. This is where it happens right here. But it can give us clues and help us. So we learn from that.
That's right. And so start preparing what beautiful room you want over there when that time comes in the next 40, 50, 150 years, because we're not going to look at it right now. But again, Thomas, you've been an incredible guest. This hour has gone so quickly. I've just absolutely loved speaking with you and your wisdom and your experience. And we'll definitely talk again. And I want to guide everyone again to your website at Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, Gates, G-A-T-E-S, .com. And he will have in a week or two, you can download his near-death experience book on audio tape. Thomas, God bless you. God bless your work. Thank you so much for being my guest today. God bless everybody.
Pleasure being here.
Oh, thank you, Thomas. It was my pleasure. My pleasure totally. God bless everyone. Have a blessed week. I look forward to talking to you next week. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.